You're listening to the Movie Crew Podcast. Tonight we talk about Robert Eggers' Nosferatu.
You no trouble. Me, fifth element. Supreme being.
You will be a weapon. You will be a minister of death, praying for war. But until that day, you are cute. Sound off like you got a pair.
Yes, I was wondering what would break first. Your spirit or your body.
You get nothing. You lose. Good day, sir.
God is dead.
The city is headed for a disaster of biblical proportion.
What do you mean, biblical?
What he means is Old Testament,
yes.
Mr. Mayor. Real wrath of God type stuff.
Dead.
Fire and brimstone coming down from the skies. Rivers and seas boiling.
40 years of darkness, earthquakes, volcanoes, the dead rising from the grave.
Human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria.
Welcome to the podcast, Movie Crew Podcast, Movie Makers Talking Movies. We're your hosts. I'm Editor Brian Elkins. With me here tonight, cinematographer Jared Callen.
How you doing, Brian?
It's a new year. I'm doing good.
Yeah, we're back.
That's right, back. LA's burning. Sorry about that. That sucks. Donate to the Red Cross or something. Whew, hopefully not every movie shuts down in the entire world. Please give us our entertainment.
LA's burning more than just money right now. Yeah. Oh.
I feel like we didn't have a moment of silence after that one. We also have with us director of photography, Mike Griggs.
Yeah, I have nothing to say after you guys brought the heat to start this. Oh, sorry. You're on fire tonight, Jared.
Yeah, thank you. I'll be here all night.
And we also have with us costume designer, Kristen Jones.
Hello.
Hey, and here we are talking about the new Robert Eggers joint, Nosferatu.
Yes, Feratu.
We're like gross Feratu, am I right?
I mean, that's the best thing that's come out of this entire, movie is that Yes Feratu meme. You know it. You love it. I will have
everybody
that
feels like they came up with it, but yeah. we all got there at the same time.
Yeah, and it's incredible. Whoever actually did that, you're a fucking genius.
I don't know if that's the best thing about that came out of the movie, but you know, cultural milestone.
No, you know what?
Sure.
Yes. I'm with Jared on this one, actually. Yeah.
No, man. It's great to see a modern adaptation of a classic, you know? And it's really good. And there's just so much hype over Mr. Skarsgård and his performance. What did you guys think? Were you hyped to see this movie?
Wait, hyped to see it or hyped to see Skarsgård as the vampire?
That's the same question.
Oh.
Oh, sorry. Then the answer is no.
Didn't care.
No, I thought it was cool that they left him completely out of the marketing material, right? Like, we only saw, like, shadows and everything, like, little silhouettes. I guess you get that one, like, shot where fucking Nicholas Holt's character opens the door and he's standing beside the dogs. But he's mostly, like, kind of silhouetted there. I was super excited. I was a little disappointed first viewing, though, I'm not going to lie. Mostly because of the mustache.
The mustache was weird, creepy, gross on a weird, creepy, gross character.
I think that's why they had it.
Probably.
Weird. And they needed it. I don't know. I didn't hate it, the mustache. Out of everything in this movie, I didn't hate the mustache. Like, if that's what we're going to pick to go with, I mean, I feel like there's other things.
All right, that's fair. I'll give you that. Yeah.
His mustache was too clean to be on such a dirty body, you know? I need more caked in blood and stuff. It just seemed a little. And there's that one moment where at the end where they start to lean in and he's so close and one of his little saw it in the IMAX. One of his little hairs like digs into her lip. And then she backs up. I was like, no. So that's absolutely frightening. It adds a whole other fucking level of disgusting, because anyone who knows who's had a mustache, it's the flavor saver. It's the gift that keeps on giving. And, you know.
Oh, no.
You
speaking
ever
as
a man,
personal mustache haver, no, don't do that. No.
You no, know, Mike, after you've been eating soup, you know, it kind of sticks around. I know you've taken your headphones off. Anyways.
I can hear you. I don't want to hear you. I'm just like, I didn't want to see this fucking
movie. Oh, fuck off. apparently he had the mustache because it's my movie and I need to change things. But also, you know, Vlad the Impaler had a mustache. A mustache, if you will.
Not a mustache like that, or at least not in those in the famous paintings.
I don't know. It's kind of long, bushy, and kind of goes out straight.
Yeah, but his is like just bushy and down. You know, it's just big.
I don't think you get a choice on how you like your facial hair grows, right? Like,
what? There are
that's
like,
all prosthetics, so they could have done.
Yeah, you
can
definitely get a choice in freaking makeup.
Oh, Robin Eggers gets a choice, Kristen.
All his mustaches are historically accurate.
I would love to see the mustache wall when they come in, and he's like, hmm.
It's a little too Yosemite Sam. I need a little more Christian Bale.
We can trim it. What do we think about the shape?
But, you know, the mustache did grow on me by the time I saw it again. And you know, the other thing that took me aback with his look was the lack of vampire fangs. He just has, like, kind of all sharp teeth.
All pointy teeth. But when he bites you, he only leaves two holes. He's very he's very dainty. He uses just the front.
Well, no, it's like four or five holes, right? Because it's
no
like
the first time he opens up his chest and there's two fucking holes,
two at the top, just like, and then there's like one or two at the bottom, right?
No, that's the next time that it adds.
All right, okay.
That's to show progression, Brian.
All right.
You know, he's like, holy fuck, I've been bit again.
Many yike.
I like later when they don't even show it. He's like, look, I've seen the demon, and he opens his chest. I'm like, oh, so you have. But, you know, I saw this really great video on the behind the scenes of the costumes. And this is so fucking awesome. They spent all this time making these, like, period-accurate costumes with, like, the fringe and all the things. And then the shot that they show from the movie where they're using it is just totally in shadow. Like, yeah, went to all this fucking trouble, and this movie's dark as fuck.
I have to say, that's exactly what it feels like to be a costume designer.
It's the hidden art. It's like, oh, trust me, it's great.
You can feel it. You can feel the movement.
It would have been great. The concept that I was originally given and worked with was fantastic. You would never know it, though.
I laughed so much. I was like, yeah. And then this time, I went and saw it again last night, and this time on the IMAX, so I was really trying to pay attention to the costume and stuff. But man, it was, if it's dark, it's all gone. You know, everything looks great in the daylight, but
you see plenty of costume in this movie, though. Like, that was one of my favorite parts of it. Like, those jackets that they were wearing were fucking
incredible.
Sick. Like, I love those.
Oh, the big formal dinner, like, you know, where they throw everybody's drinking, like, you know, he's just about to go out of town. They're putting the kids to bed, and like all the gowns and everything. It just fucking it looks incredible. It looks
well,
like
even the scene when like when they get thrown out on the street to have to go back home or whatever, like they still look like way more dressed up than anyone like in current modern day. Like he's got his little fucking tie thing going on or ascot or whatever. I don't know what it is. It looks good. That's what I'm saying.
But I will say, I feel like the costumes were absolutely fantastic. And one of the things I really did not enjoy, and it kind of led to blending in with the shadows, is how drab everything was. I feel like there's a way to do like a contrast, like a dark look and contrast it. But I don't think that's what they were really going for. In fact, when they went to the town in Transylvania, I was like, why is everything so drab here? Like everything is in a neutral color, and it's a choice. And I think it kind of lends to the fact that you can't really like see anything. Nothing really stands out, which is a shame because the costumes are absolutely outstanding.
Yeah, it's weird. You're right. When they go to that that town, everybody's like fucking dancing and slapping themselves on the knees and doing all the things around him. It's all blues and grays and browns, and they all kind of blend into the background a little bit the tone of the world and them.
And especially, I mean, if you look at like gypsies or if you look at Eastern Europeans, they're not really known for dressing in drab colors. They're known for their bright, colorful clothing. Like, it was definitely a choice. And then I noticed the rest of the movie was doing that too. The rest of the movie, nothing really stood out. And I wonder if it was, they were sort of going for something more like, I don't know, Tim Burton-y, but his clothing pops and nothing here really popped. Everything kind of was drab. Even though it was so elaborate and so fancy, it was still drab.
I think they're trying to emulate the style of, like, I don't know, the original Nosferatu, right?
No, I thought that was more interesting.
I did notice that that his travel coat was very similar to the Nosferatu original.
Oh, Nicholas Holtz?
We talked about that.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
You mean like in terms of like black and white and like there's no color, like that's what they were trying to emulate?
Well, no, it's
not
only that.
They did do that, yeah.
It is
yeah.
hard to see things, and like there are a lot of things that are just in shadow in that film. Like you can't see anything but a shadow on a wall, and you can't even make out the texture of the wall. It's so overexposed, you know? And I mean, that's the limitations of the film gear they had at the time, but that's also German expressionism, you know? I guess this is like the modern next step they're trying to go for, you know? I don't know. I thought it looked great, though. I know it is desaturated, but like, I don't know. I don't want a cheerful Mary Poppins looking fucking horror movie now.
I do. That would be amazing.
No, yeah. Not this. Yeah. No. Yeah. I love something like that. We haven't had a nice gothic horror film in, fuck, I can't even think of the last one.
Bram Stoker's Dracula. The first time I watched this, I did not really like it, and I was so sad because I was like, I could be watching Dracula. But the second time I did enjoy it more, so I'm glad I watched it more than once.
Same here. My first viewing was a little, like, I was a little humdrum. I was like, man, we didn't really change much from the original. I was expecting, like, a new kind of take on this, but it was pretty, it's not like the other one that's out right now, which is basically a shot-for-shot remake. Yeah.
You talking about the Doug Jones one?
The Doug Jones one, where Doug Jones plays.
Yeah. They took the original Nosferatu, they reused the backgrounds, and then reshot actors on a, you know, on a green screen and put them on top of the plates for the original
and
Nosferatu movie.
Did a shot-for-shot remake.
That's weird.
It is very strange.
I haven't seen it yet. I've seen some stills from it.
I'm going to watch it later. So I was a little disappointed in that. Like, it just felt like we didn't really dig new ground. It was more like, okay, metal can be jammed into vampires to stake them to the ground. There were like little things added like that and expounding on a few things. So, but I will say the second go around, especially in IMAX, was very, very, very good. And I actually appreciated the film a lot more and actually enjoyed myself a lot more the second go around.
In what sort of ways? Like what was it about the second time that made it better?
Maybe my all expectation was
yeah,
down.
I think your expectations were lowered the second time.
Yes, that's the biggest thing. It's like, okay.
You knew what the movie was, so you settled in for the ride that it is.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I was able to actually really like pay more attention to things, and I was able to, well, the first one I had just gotten off a fucking flight from Europe, and I was a little tired, but like this time around, I was actually able to like really pay attention, and it just, I don't know, it's just, it felt like a more cohesive thing. And I had just also watched The Lighthouse the same day.
Oh my god,
and,
okay,
made me
so you
really
were ready for something that had like actual movement in it.
It's interesting. And also to know that they shot the same lenses on The Lighthouse and this movie, so it was interesting to see a cleaner version with the same setup.
Yeah, I gotta say, I was bored as fuck in this movie. Like, there's so much technical to it that was extremely well executed. Like, everything was beautiful. Like, production design was fantastic. I loved the costumes. But goddamn, like, Robert Eggers is just like, you're going to sit on this shot until I tell you that you're done and you don't get to consent. I'm just going to sit on it forever. And it's like, what are we even doing? Can we get it? Can we move on, please? Please? Okay, we're still here.
Coverage. He doesn't believe in coverage.
It's not even coverage. It's like the number of, let's do a 90-degree pan and a 180-degree pan and like stay in the exact center and he's going to run around us and then we're going to sit on the other side of it for like 20 seconds. It's like, okay, we get it. He's running. Like, we could have half this shot and still get the same tone, the same emotion. Dude just wanted to sit on stuff for so long, and I was bored as fuck.
I had that feeling the first go around a little bit, but I enjoyed it the next. I think
really?
It built. Yeah, I kind of, I brought up the pans as well. I said I thought the pans were a little superfluous, but I really enjoyed them the second go around for, like, you know, world building, tone building, like, you know, in that one that you're talking about when he goes by and he's going across the fields and you can see the churches off in the distance and then the windmills, and then we do our pan around and he comes back.
Man,
and he's
right by the tree. So we see all the windmills.
It fucking looks incredible, and it really, like, helps. Oh, it sets the tone for where he's going, and you also see the bigger shift in where he lives versus by the time that we get into the woods and all that going down toward, you know, when he.
Oh, sure. Oh, sure. Yeah, no, I got all of that. It just, that whole sequence was at least a third longer than I needed any of it to be to get, again, the same tone, the same sense of dread, the same sense of progression. It was just, it just felt self-indulgent. And I felt that the entire movie. Like, I liked the way that the camera was moving, but at one point I was like, okay, now the camera movement is a gimmick, because every single shot is a push-in or a pull-out or a push-in or a pull-out or, oh, we're back to pushing in. Oh, no, now we're pulling out again. Like,
yeah, but the actors are moving around and the blocking is always changing, and we're going from two shots to medium shots and ending in close-ups, and I don't know, man. It's not like we're just, like, dollying into something or trucking in.
No, that's true. Every shot felt like it had, like, intentionality to it. I think what bothered me about it is that I was so disconnected from anything that was happening to any of the characters that I spent the entire time looking at all the technicalities. Like, what's the camera doing now? Cool. Because I didn't give a shit about the characters. This movie felt like someone read a comic book and then wanted to make a visual version, like a movie version of the comic book, except the comic book was a fucking silent film from the 20s. It felt like so overly, there was so much homage to it that I don't know. I'm struggling to find articulation for the reason why it just didn't connect with me. But, like, I think really what it comes down to is I'm not a fan of Robert Eggers, because I felt the same way in every other version of his movies that I've seen. I couldn't even get through The Lighthouse. I was so bored.
Man, I rewatched The Witch this weekend and was like, God, that has got to be the best movie made this fucking century. Holy shit, it's so fucking good. It's the 90 best minutes of my life. Oh my God, I just want to watch it again.
Have you seen that one, Mike?
No, and I refuse to, because I don't give a shit. I don't care about horror movies.
It's short.
And if you love horror movies, yeah, maybe it's amazing, but, like, that's not an emotional journey that I want to experience. And maybe that's why this guy just doesn't work for me, because he is that tone. He is that kind of a vibe. And so many people have watched that movie and seem to be responding to him with that level of enthusiasm that I just don't. Yeah, I don't know. It's just not my cup of tea.
Yeah, The Witch would challenge you in other ways, too, with its content.
Oh, it's such a great movie. Oh,
it is good. It ends really strong.
This movie is not as good as that. And I had some problems. All of my problems with this film were the things that they changed from the original Nosferatu. It was just all story stuff. Like, I thought all the technical stuff, I thought all the acting, I thought everything was great. It's just the screenplay, you know? There's just some moments. And there's also some shots, you know? Like, where they call out things that I didn't have a problem with in the first version of Nosferatu, right? In the first version of Nosferatu, we have the ship go from Transylvania to fucking Germany, right? Mm-hmm. I never questioned that ever before. But in this version of the movie, when you have Hear Knock, literally, there's a shot where they show a map and he points and he's like, yes, Transylvania, and then he moves his finger to Germany, and it's like 2 inches. And at that point, you know, once you have that visualized in your head and you get to the ship, it's like, wait a minute. Why the fuck is he going by boat? It's just like we're adding a little bit too much detail to where now I'm thinking about things that are dumb and, like, plot holes. Because originally, you're adapting that because the original story is from Dracula and we're going to England, which makes a lot more sense because it's a fucking island. You have to get there by ship in the 1800s. So when you change it to Germany, you're on the same continent. It doesn't make a lot of sense.
You're right.
You know, and it's just like visual things like that that we have with modern storytelling. It's just like, well, it just calls out how
You saw his giant box of gold coins, but he is rich. But he, you know, it's probably cheaper to ship the coffin and all the other coffins with dirt and shit and rats and stuff by ship than it was by land. You
know? Well, I don't know if anyone saw this, but one of the original details that has gotten lost over time is that he was going to England because they were they kind of touched on this here, but they were very Western and they were very scientific, and they were no longer Catholic. And so they had kind of lost all knowledge of vampires and didn't know what they were. And so they could just go to England and take over, essentially. Not that they were smart, not that they could do anything. And so that was another reason that England was so key and was the setting for this. Yeah, changing it doesn't really make sense.
Interesting. He does tell him, he's like, you know, I look forward to moving to where you are, where they do not have such superstitions.
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But that's, it's because they essentially were like, oh, this isn't science. It's not real. And they had essentially like forgotten all knowledge. And that was why they were going to England, was because they were like, they don't know how to stop us anymore.
It's a demon.
And that plays into William Dafoe's character, who is just absolutely crazy in this version of Nosferatu. But I don't know. I like that.
I did.
He was the best part of this whole movie, for sure. Yeah.
And I also, okay, I didn't like the end as much either. In the first original Nosferatu, the main actress has so much more, like, her character has so much more agency. Like, you know, like, she reads the book herself, and she makes the decision, like, okay, this is how I have to slay the beast. I have to give myself to it. This movie really complicates the fucking end.
Yeah, it does. I agree.
But she says, let me walk you to the door, doctor. And they go up and they have that little moment on the steps. And he's like, you know that she's like, I know that I'm the one that has to do this. And he's like, yes, you are the one. But they doesn't tell her what to do. It just, you know, how does she know to do?
Well, because the count, you know, he's like, hey, he's already made his like 3-day request at that point. Right. So,
yeah. But how does she know that, you know, I need to keep him until daylight.
I don't know if she knows about that.
I don't think she – yeah, at that point, it kind of plays – to me, it played more like she knows that she's the one that will keep him occupied while they take care of whatever it is that would actually kill him, of him not being able to go back into his coffin or whatever. That's what the conversation seemed like it was implying to me.
But she didn't have to die at that point then, you know? Like if all we got to do is go burn his fucking castle, kill all these rats, and burn up his fucking dirt and shit and like, throw it off into the ocean, whatever – and then, you know, we could have kept half our army back to keep him away from her while we do that. And then just wait out till, you know, till sunrise.
Yeah, it makes the guys look stupid. The vampire hunter dudes look like a bunch of fucking morons. Yeah. It's like, guys, why don't we just go, like, take her with us while we burn his fucking coffin? I mean,
right.
This seems...
Right, let her come with.
Why did she have to die? I don't know. Yeah, it's just, it's really, I don't know. And that's from Dracula, too. That's not from Nosferatu, you know? The vampire hunter's, like, going out and looking for the coffin. And it makes sense in Dracula, too, because there's a bunch of different coffins filled with dirt. And this one, it's just, like, brings his...
It's just the one.
Yeah, his actual tomb with him. Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of little story things like that confuse me. Also, too, like, the vampire. The vampire you see get staked at the very beginning... Mm-hmm. Did you guys get totally confused by that?
I was confused why there was a virgin offering when they were going to not give it to the vampire. They were just going to virgin offer around, like she's floating there. She's on a horse, you know, and then now we're going to kill this. Now, let me at least rub the blood from the vampire on her or something. Like, none of that made any sense.
Maybe she's there to distract him, and actually she doesn't have to die, and our heroine got confused in the movie.
Well, second time I saw it, there is...
yeah, maybe they're doing it right there.
Our heroine just got a little overwhelmed with some of her dreams. Got confused.
Oh, that's incredible.
There's a subtitle there. I think they say something along the lines of the horse and the virgin are there to lead them the way to the vampire.
Oh, yeah, because they didn't necessarily know where it was like that. They were following her to go find it.
Oh, so again, like, our heroine was a little confused.
She's like, right, turn ahead.
Jeez, this GPS is getting really newfangled. Can we get one of those these days?
But once you have another vampire in there, that leads you to think that Count Orlok has been feeding on people ever since he's been woken up by Miss Depp, right? So he's going around feeding on people. These gypsies are going around staking these vampires that he's creating. So when we get to London, when we get to Germany, why are there no vampires? He's clearly going around eating people, left and right.
There's...
Why do we not see anybody come back?
Or is he not? Is it the plague?
No, because
the rats are giving people plague.
That one doctor shows the bite to William Dafoe, right? And William Dafoe's like, oh, Nosferatu, I need to see your patient right away. You know, there's that whole scene. So we're connecting the rat bites and the Nosferatu bite. I don't know, man.
I don't know. Are there mountains in between them or something? I don't know.
No, I mean, but like once he starts eating people, like, yeah, I don't know. Once you start making vampires, we should see more vampires.
Oh, are you saying that he... Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, I'm trying to remember. So originally, I don't know how often he was feeding is what I'm trying to say, because in the original novel, and again, we're blurring the lines here, I think, between Dracula and Nosferatu, but
he didn't turn anybody into a vampire.
Right. And so that's what I was going to say. Well, first of all, is he turning people? And second of all, in the original novel, you have like when you like die and become a vampire, you kind of go like you're brain dead. You're kind of stupid. And that's why you feed on people to sort of regain your life. And at some point you become like a person again. And Nosferatu was not there yet. Or Dracula wasn't there yet. Yeah. So I don't know how often he's feed. Like they don't establish how often he's feeding. They don't establish where he is in this whole process.
Yeah, but he's like he sucks the life out of those fucking two little girls and drops them dead.
They're
and then
little.
Goes and feeds the mom, and they don't come back as vampires. Okay. And the husband is even like making out with her with his fucking goddamn plague boils and shit.
Yeah, but they burn all them, you know, just to make sure.
Yeah, but it's at night too, so they should be coming up as vampires or something, right?
Yeah.
What the fuck? What inconsistencies? Well, it's just blowing
isn't,
my mind.
Okay, but aren't vampires only supposed to be created when they drink each other's blood? Like if the vampire drinks the person's blood and then they drink the vampire's blood.
That may be an Anne Rice thing.
That might be, yeah. Well, the rules for this universe are not established. Okay?
That's true.
Oh, okay. All right, that's fair.
I think that's where we can land on this, is nothing is really established here. And so it's confusing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, or like vampires just like spirits that just need to be called out and then they just go inhabit a body or something and they're like, oh.
They could just be demons. I thought that was a great plot twist. Just possession, that's all.
That is my favorite change, though, the fact that she like calls out, you know, just out of loneliness and desperation, just I want somebody.
Come
or horniness
me.
Whatever.
Oh, it's definitely horniness. Yeah, that was channeling some of the Dracula movie. But also this, for as much as this movie brought up, I don't know, kink or like things that people are into when they're younger and how that comes back to haunt them, I guess. Like, what the fuck was he saying with all that shit? Like, there's a lot of, like, sexual things going on and sexual themes, but, like, there's not really much in terms of, like...
Oh, there's a bunch, man. It's all about sexual repression for women, right? I mean, that's the whole thing. I mean, that's why, like, they tie her down and they're gagging her. They fucking throw ether in her fucking face when she's moaning.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, we can't have this woman moaning, saying, oh, he's coming. Oh, he's coming. Writhing all sexually. Like her dad, she's got some backstory where like her dad sees her naked and she's, you know, writhing on the ground and moaning. And he's like, oh my God, bitch, you're getting out of my house. You're a fucking harlot. And it's like, wait a minute. She didn't actually have sex. She was just naked, rolling around on the ground, and you threw her out? That's a bit extreme.
Well, it's indecent.
Yeah.
She was in her nakedness.
Unclean.
I'm unclean! Women are supposed to be, you know, embarrassed of their sexuality, sir.
I would like to point out that everything you're saying is true, but also at this time period, men were also very asexual and not expressing themselves sexually.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. They did have a little bit of that on the ship owner dude, the husband guy. He was like, oh, no. What? Why would I be into my wife right now? What?
Yeah, it was not a thing.
He was trying to get kisses on the beach, and the woman was like, oh, not in public. You're going to kiss me on my lips out here where people can see us?
I forget exactly when it ended, but yes, obviously women were considered evil temptresses. But yes, for the men, it was like the highest level you could achieve was being a virgin because it meant you could use your mind more. And so I think that's what they're still capturing here. And so, yes, her writhing around and moaning is bad, but like it's also bad. Like for it's not just bad because she's a harlot. It's bad because they're like, oh, my brain is more important than my body, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. Women are not allowed to like even think in this universe or like, I don't know. There's even a moment where like she breaks down and what if she say something like she starts talking about her dreams and her husband's like, no, don't worry about this. Let's not speak of this ever again.
Ever again. Yeah, that was real early in this movie. That was like one of the first things. That's where we're going. All right.
Never speak these things aloud.
Yeah.
I'm sorry you have trauma. Just forget about it.
Yep.
It's okay.
Never. We don't need to talk about it. I don't want to know that you have trauma. That's fine. Like, what the fuck?
No, yeah. All the men come off looking a little terrible in this movie.
Explain this to me, Kristen. So, she gets down on her knees and she's like down at him and she looks up at him and she's like, you'll never be able to satisfy me as he did. And he's like, oh, fuck that. And he gets all excited and he's like, you've challenged me, woman. And he throws her down on the thing and then he starts having sex with her, but through the bloomers. Did that not fuck you up? I was like, you're supposed to pull those down, right? Or is okay. there a, like,
explain so, something to me, Chris.
Well, in this,
how does sex work?
They had sex through the bloomers. In actuality, bloomers were split open for Eve to go to the bathroom. And so he could have done that. But in the film, no, he could not have done that.
And I was thinking that was a little weird.
It really reminded me of like TV shows that are like on basic cable where they can't show stuff. That's what it reminded me of.
And in this movie,
it doesn't really fit because there's a lot of unnecessary. I guess Eggers feels it's necessary, but yeah, they could.
As much nudity as there is, it's weird that this, you know. And I was wondering, are bloomers the kind of, you know, pull it to the side type thing, but it seemed like they're full on pants, you know. So
we think of them as full on pants. Yes, they were not full on pants at the time, but they were wearing full on pants in the movie. So I don't know.
Okay, yeah. So that was a little weird. He's like, we don't have time to do all this. Just go, just do it. It'll be fine.
Nah, it's fine.
Yeah,
it's fine.
He wanted it so bad, he pushed through. It's fine.
Wasn't comfortable for either of them. Okay.
No.
This is incredible. An early condom breakout.
It's like that Mormon sheet sex thing.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
No sack is gonna hold me back.
Oh my God. Brian, let's watch this.
All right. On that note, we're gonna play the trailer for Robert Eggers. Nosferatu. We'll be sack back.
Come to me. I've never shared my secret with any soul.
You've had these spells since childhood. Tell me what you can from the beginning.
It is like a dream. It was our wedding. When we turned around, everyone was dead. The stench of their bodies was horrible. Standing before me was death. But I'd never been so happy.
This creature is a force more powerful than evil. Its desire is to consume all life on Earth. Only you can redeem us. He is coming.
There is a devil in this world, and I have met him. But you could never please me as he could.
That was a trailer for Robert Eggers' Nosferatu. No subtitle this time.
It's a good trailer.
It is a good trailer.
It's a good trailer. It reminds me of that opening, like, orchestral hit when, you know, she's writhing on the ground and we start craning down through the ground into darkness, and then that fucking title just hits, and it's just so heavy in the theater. It's overwhelming. It's great.
This does lose a lot. Being on a computer screen, though.
Yes.
All these images in the theater are fucking amazing. We haven't talked about the sound yet, either. Oh, good sound.
Good sound. Good sound.
All of his noises, he's very... he's very labored breath. You can't even...
I hated that.
Here right now.
It sounded like he had a CPAP machine next to him.
He needed one.
Yeah, something.
Maybe he had a punctured lung, okay? I mean, you know.
And he probably shouldn't be talking. Like, let's rest. Like, I don't know. I hated his voice in this.
Well, they say that Bill Skarsgård had to go to, like, a vocal coach an opera singer to get his octave down the lower. But maybe that's just him laboring because he's fucking crushing his fucking throat to get there. So that's actually him.
I hope that's not him. That doesn't sound healthy at all.
They said that if he would have done it any longer, he would have ruined his throat forever.
Oh, my God.
You know, oh, my God. It's called ADR.
I don't know. It was pretty fucking baller, man. I kind of liked it.
They said the only thing that they did to his voice was increase the volume because he could do it, but it only, like, quietly.
Oh, fair.
He couldn't project.
That's what microphones are for.
Yeah. I wasn't on board with it, you know, first viewing, but second viewing, no. I love Count Warlock. Like his look, like his voice. I'm here for it.
His
rotten penis.
Penis? Yeah.
Yeah, his rotten penis. Nice rotten penis. First time I saw it, there was one girl in the back that laughed, which got me chuckling.
I have a pretty big problem with that scene, and that's not because he doesn't dress to the left or the right and it's just straight up and down, but it's more that it's daylight when he walks into there, because this is the next morning after Thomas is, holy shit, I'm being eaten and I need to fucking leave. So he, like, runs downstairs and he can't get out the door, and he's like, holy fuck, and it's the first door he comes to, and he fucking breaks the lock off the door and he goes in. It's still daylight, and this motherfucker rises up from his fucking coffin and stands in the daylight and doesn't fucking die.
Jared, look, when he stands, it's dark. Okay, this is a vampire horror movie trope 101, all right? It's like, I swear to God, in 50% of every fucking vampire movies you watch, all right? Right when we go to, like, destroy our vampire in our halfway point of our movie, right? What happens is we get there, and it's daylight, or it's, like, getting really sunset, and then right as we get ready to open the coffin, somehow the sun just magically time lapses down.
There's this beautiful shot that's a crane shot.
Time lapses magically.
But they should have done that when we actually, like, we're on the front of the coffin, and we, like, crane up, and we, like, tilt down, and we, like, push over the top of it, and we see the fucking, the logo, his like, crazy fucking, like, septagram or whatever the fuck it is, and fucking, like, pushes the but there's daylight on the coffin right there, and then he, like, pushes the fucking lid off and you see his, like, dead body lying there with fucking rats and shit. It's got light hitting it from the sun.
Yeah, that's golden hour, bro. That's what that is, you know.
Okay, well, it's got to be morning
that's
light.
A civil twilight.
Okay. It can't be twilight. Oh, maybe that's why those other movies are called Twilight.
Civil twilight.
They can live
so
in the twilight. They can't live in the morning
past the direct
light.
Sunlight, yeah. But you still have plenty of. Yeah, it's no, but for reals, there is, like, a solid 30 minutes of visible light after the sun sets, and it can, when there's, you know, not much light in a place, come through one window and feel like it's streaming in as if it's daylight, because it is still relatively the color of daylight. So
he slept through the whole day and basically woke up, like, 2 minutes before sunset.
I think he woke up when that motherfucker took the coffin lid off.
No, I'm talking about
Nicholas
Thomas.
Holt's
yeah. Yeah, he basically, this is like, it's like it's the next morning is what I'm saying. So I don't know about
that. Well, okay, I'll give you that, because that also confused me of like how long, it seemed like he woke up like relatively early when it's really bright outside. But like, there's not really much indication as to, number one, how long he had been sleeping, so how close it was to sunset. And number two, how long he was searching the grounds trying to find a way out. Like I kind of assumed after the fact that was like, oh, he's been running around for like 4 hours trying to figure this shit out.
I know this movie's already long, but we needed a couple more shots of him, like, you know,
that's what I'm saying. Like, give me actual things happening, not just like we're sitting on a shot just because you like the shot. Like, the story along.
I do think there's some time frame like issues. Like, things are not like, we don't know how long he's at the castle, and
yeah. Yeah.
We don't know how long his trips are, and like, none of this information is given to us, so it's, I don't know. It makes it all seem like it's really compressed time. Like, everything's happening really quick.
Yeah, but then there's kind of references later that it was supposed to be like, well, no, before he goes, he said it was like a 6-week journey or something like that. Like, is that travel across like the continent? Because he's traveling on horse. Or is that supposed to be like a 6 weeks there, and then I'll be back, and you know, I'm going to go and I'll be back in 6 weeks? Like, that's a long time, but at least you have a frame of reference kind of thing. I don't know. It didn't make sense to me, but I only saw it once.
I don't know. It does feel like there's some stuff cut out.
Yes, but they did fix one moment in this version that has bugged me in every other version, is when he goes in for the first night. He finally arrives, and he says, okay, break out the fucking contract, and they all look at it, and then he ends up like picking up something on the table, like a knife, and he's like, eat, and he cuts his finger. And in all other fucking, you know, Nosferatu runs over and like licks it, you know, or in Dracula, you know, anyways, they all don't react to this crazy fucking demon that's around them. But Nicholas Holt character Thomas actually like starts fucking panicking. He's like, I'm fucked. Like, he actually like has a reaction there. He doesn't just like wave it off.
Well, they do something cool
there.
I love
that beat,
because like he doesn't go over there and lick his finger, right? Like, that's when he like starts to hypnotize him.
Yeah,
and he thinks he's like by the dinner table, and then he like looks over and he's really by the fireplace, and the count's over by the dinner table, and he's like coming at him, and it's just like, wait, what the fuck? What just happened to
Geography?
Well,
yeah, he was like, come over by the fireplace, and I'll see if I can tend to your wounds. And then he like fucking transports over there, and he's like, oh. He starts to have this fucking meltdown, which is really, really, really great moment. And that's how you would react in these moments when this motherfucker is apparating around the room, and you know, yeah, I really like that beat.
I really like Nicholas Holt's performance. He really sold that, like, I'm in a trance and a terrified, I can't move face was, oh, it was so good.
Yeah, he's pretty consistently good in this. I'll give you that one.
Yeah, I liked all the actors. I saw a lot of reviewers were shitting on Aaron Taylor Johnson, but I thought he was great, too.
Yeah.
Who was he?
He is Anna's husband.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, the ship owner dude?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Who didn't like him?
Why didn't they like him?
Oh, yeah, why?
I don't know. Probably because he was in Craven this year, and they were like, well, obviously. he's a shitty actor. I don't know. I don't know why people didn't like him.
I thought the acting was really good. I thought the script is what needed work.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. The worst acting was those little kids.
Mommy, I'm frightened. I don't want to go to my room.
They're only in two scenes, and the third one, they're dead.
I know. That was really like fucking like, all right, great. That was good. Yeah, shut them up. That was actually a badass scene where he fucking rips their throats out. And he finally goes for the throat, you know, instead of just like trying to break through the breastplate. I think that was more about killing them instead of just drinking them.
Okay, is that what we're going with? If you bite, neck bite, you're dead. Chest bite, you may become a vampire.
Maybe,
huh? Are we fixing this?
Depends on how much sex is involved.
Well, even with Thomas, and there's that shot by the fireplace where he's just like fucking drinking from him and just like riding him.
Oh yeah, that's also a very sexual scene.
Yeah. Through the clothes, though. It's always through the clothes in this one.
Well, your first time usually is.
Well, except for the end.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, like, she'd already like succumbed by that point. She had, you know. Sign still delivered. I'm yours.
I love that last shot too, where it's like overhead and you see like Nosferatu's like dead body on top of her.
Oh, and he's got those so emaciated gross, fucking like hips. And he's just so thin and gross.
So gross.
Yeah. Ugh.
Oh, man. I love it, too, because, like, William Dafoe's character throws down those flowers, and it's like, oh, those flowers are about as big as his legs.
Yeah, which doesn't make sense, because like, Kristen even talked about it earlier. It's like, it's weird. Like, he's drank so much blood at this point, he should have, like, plumped up a little bit. You know, he should start to revitalize, or maybe this version of Dracula doesn't.
Yeah, Nosferatu never changes his appearance.
Yeah, I also was, like, getting confused watching this movie. I was like, all right, is this the Nosferatu influence or is this the Dracula influence? And I kept expecting him to like not look so old and gross and decrepit on like the back of his head and all that shit, and then he just did the entire time. So
okay, but did anyone notice that yeah, he looked old and decrepit and gross except for his nails?
Oh, those are perfect. Yeah, his fingers,
he looked like he just came back from the nail salon, and I was like, we could like I know you want extra long tips, but we could have really done something there. I felt like that was really lacking, considering how much detail went into the rest of him.
You need a shot of him sitting around like really like working on his nails. He's like,
well, no, okay, so look, you know? The thing is, his nails are super long, right? Because yeah. He's gross, and so obviously he needed fake tips for that. Like you can't really grow your nails like to that length, really. They're fake. Okay, but let's assume that he's decrepit and dead and gross. Like at the very least, he would be deficient in vitamins, and he would have like ridges in his nails. They would be dirty. Maybe there's blood caked under there. Like maybe they would be yellowing. Maybe they're just kind of like gray and perfectly manicured. I noticed it in two different scenes.
No, didn't they have some gradient to them? They were like darker in some spots, right?
Maybe.
Because he's also got like hair on his hands, and he's got like some kind of boil or rotting.
Okay, well, maybe they fixed it in some scenes and not others, because I was trying to, I just noticed in one scene when like it's a close up of his hands, and I was like, what is happening with his nails? They were perfect. And it was interesting too, because since I was looking at their nails, other people who had much better nails, like they had like their natural fingernails, like kind of yellowing with like dirt caked under the, like there was stuff under them. It just looked disgusting. Like these people had never seen water, which I think is what you're supposed to go for in this kind of movie, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, just a little note there.
You know, even when you're undead, you got to get your nails did, okay?
I mean, clearly he has priorities. I respect it.
Undead nail salon. We do vampires and zombies only. Sorry. Yeah. I guess, is that the only thing they kind of really retained from the old Nosferatu look?
The claws?
Yeah, the hands?
The nails were different in the original Nosferatu, and they were more claw-like, and they did look like cartoonish, right? But like,
yeah,
these just look like they were done, like they were just fresh nails, which is very different.
They added length to his fingers just past the last knuckle there, or the first knuckle, about a centimeter on each finger, plus the fingernail.
Oh yeah, you can tell in that shot when he's grabbing the locket when he moves his hand in.
Oh, in the original one, you mean?
No, it's about this one.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they extended his fingers. They made them longer by about a centimeter per finger, and then the nail on top of that longer.
Interesting.
Yeah, I feel like that's one of those things that looks good on wide shots but never actually works on a close-up, because as soon as you see someone trying to grab something with their fingers, it's like, oh, it becomes like we're wearing gloves and we can't touch anything anymore. And it's like,
yeah, he's holding
okay.
That jug of wine, trying to pour it, and his thumb is bending in a weird way. Yeah,
yeah, it looks really cool in wide shots. You're correct, and I don't think it should be done in close-ups at all.
And shadows look great.
Yeah, shadows also. Yeah,
I wanted more shadows in this. Like, there were some really, really great ones. Like the one where she's standing in front of the open window, and like you have that. Like the shot was in the trailer too, where you see his silhouette with the flapping curtains or whatever.
How the movie opens, yeah, it's so good.
Yeah, yeah, like that. There's a couple of those kinds of things that are like really, really cool. Like, oh fuck, how do they even do that? Like, really cool. And then the shot of like that aerial shot over the city where his hand is the the silhouette of his shadow moving across the city, implying that he's going from his spot to go grab her or whatever. Like, that was kind of an interesting shot. But again, another one of those, like, okay, we got it. Like, let's move the fuck on. But for how much silhouette shadow work was in the original and for how much this movie was trying to homage and rip off and directly, like, let's just repeat stuff. Like, I wanted more of that. Was that just me or was, like...
No, I agree with you. I think there were definitely some things... considering how much, yes, this was a homage, there were so many things that I thought were missing that I would have put in to a remake that I really loved about the first one. And yes, I think a lot of the shadows could have been, maybe, I think the shadows could have been done better. There was a lot in shadow here, but I almost preferred the original because it was so much more contrasted. And with this one, a lot of times I was like, wait, am I supposed to see some things or something there? And it wasn't suspenseful, it was what's happening. This is really dark.
yeah
It wasn't like a design choice necessarily. I mean, I guess it was, but it looks like someone just didn't do their job.
I thought the shadow stuff was great. I definitely got enough of it. This one I liked what they were doing with the geography more. And they also brought some things back from Bram Stoker's Dracula with, like, you know, having shadows over here. And then the, you know, Count is now on the left side of frame where he was on the right before. And the stagecoach, you know, when that appears. He gets sucked into it like Keanu Reeves does, right? So,
yeah.
I don't know. We're pulling in, like, more tricks. I mean, even that shot where, like, the stagecoach, the horses look like they're going to run over Nicholas Holt.
Dude, that whole set piece looks incredible.
Right?
He's, like, standing there and he's on, like, that fucking crossroads that looks like an upside-down
cross.
Upside-down cross
right now?
Yes. I was like, holy shit, this is fucking awesome. It looks incredible.
That is something out of a goddamn, like, Edgar Allan Poe short story, like, on the fucking screen, man.
Yeah. I love how it's so backlit right there, but as the camera gets closer, his face lifts a little bit. The same thing with when, who is it? The guy who's in the prison cell and he eats the fucking, the pigeon head, the Canuck. Like, as the camera, he's in this backlit, but as the camera gets in closer, there's obviously a fucking light on the camera, and it just lightly lifts his face. It's fucking incredible.
It's not a light on the camera. It's a grip rocking next to him with a fucking goddamn bounce card.
That's very possible as well.
Yeah, no, I saw some of those moments too. They were
it's really cool.
All right, speaking of Knock, Brian, did you like all of those sequences with his whole character, like, freaking out and dripping blood and, like, doing his, like, 4 minute long goddamn monologues and shit?
It's coming.
You know, we never have gotten Knock's backstory, and on all these Nosferatu adaptations, we've never ever once, like, covered, like, how Knock and the Count met or how any of that happened. And I guess this one, they have, like, he's got a little seance table a pentagram drawn on the floor in his office. So that gives you, like, a little something in this one. I enjoyed that to show how they connected.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I was also confused the first time I watched the original of, like, well, how did he even know about this guy in the first place? Like, how did he get under his spell or whatever? He just seems like he's just immediately convinced. This was a little bit more, oh, okay, he's into some shit. he's like the other opposite end of the spectrum version of asking for Nosferatu, except it's not a sexual,
he just wants to be a vampire. Yeah. He's like, maybe. Fuck, he didn't make me.
He wants to be the Rat King.
Well, it's true, yeah. Yeah, he said something about that, yeah.
I was like, what the fuck is that? What the fuck is the Rat King, bro? Be the master.
That's the sequel
of the plague.
To Nosferatu, is Rat King.
The Rat King. Oh, and they also fix the, you know, Knock. He also fixes the stupidest part in the original Nosferatu, where you see Count Orlok carrying his fucking coffin all throughout Germany.
I love that moment, though. He's like extra strong and shit, and then he's really fast because they undercrank it.
And they don't show the loading of the coffins onto the, you know,
that,
the,
I mean,
the,
that,
the magic side of him. You know,
yeah, that was one of my favorite moments of the original. Give me that shit. Like, him doing his own goddamn dirty work.
I heard an interview with Robert Eggers, and they asked him why he didn't do that shot, and he said, because I thought it was stupid.
Oh, shocking.
Yeah, I'm okay with him cutting that out, too.
I guess, though, if you don't know this story, you know, it would be kind of a jump because you don't see that crate, you know, at his castle. So it would be a little bit of a logic jump if you'd never seen any adaptation of Dracula or Nosferatu, that he goes from that tomb thing.
Explain it.
Yeah, it's the wooden box.
But you do see him open doors and do things without touching it, you know. So he could be moving things around.
Yeah. Well, and like during the journey on the boat, like they have that great sequence where the guy is like walking up to the box to like cut it open or whatever, and he's like in those ropes or whatever, and he's like kind of there but kind of not there, and then the lightning flashes and you see him like real good in that. Like that was some pretty great, like, let's do some horror movie shit right here. But I needed a couple more of those. Like, that was something I felt this was missing as well, because like the original felt like there was a good amount of like, oh, Nosferatu's killing off the people on the boat. This one was like, let's show it once and then you understand, right? Well, okay, do we though?
When they find that first plague victim, though, on the fucking boat, and that one guy just, like, leans over into frame and barfs.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, that fucking goddamn sound effect for the vomit is so wet.
Oh,
it almost makes me gag.
It's so gross.
All the sound stuff is great. We talked about it earlier. But, yeah, all the slurping, all the crunching, all of that stuff is fucking top tier.
Anybody got anything else? I think I've covered everything in my notes, I think. Are we at ratings? Question mark?
I don't have much good to say about this, so we call it as far as I'm concerned. I'm really fucking struggling on this one, guys. I'm sorry.
Sounds like you're going first.
Yeah. Cool. All right. I'll go first. Robert Eggers, you have a lot of technical prowess. You have a lot of aesthetic choices that are interesting for a particular tone. I don't know if that's going to always apply to every movie that you do, but fuck, man. I do not care about your characters. Like, and that's the whole jam. The whole jam of every fucking movie is to put people on screen that we can either relate to or hate or like or something. And I don't give a shit about any of these people. Maybe that's me. Maybe that's the story just getting rehashed, or I don't know. But this movie just doesn't work for me. Maybe I'm just not the target audience. I think there's a lot of great technical expertise that went into making this. I think the cinematography is beautiful. I like the framing of most of the shots. I like the shadow work, and the lighting is kind of interesting in a lot of things. The costumes were amazing. That was one of the best parts to look at in the entire thing. The production design is fantastic. But everything is a little bit drab in a way that I would expect it to be if you are working from the look backwards. Like, if you start with a look in mind and have a tone and a lookbook and like, I want the entire movie to look like this. Cool. Well, now let's design every single piece of art, every single piece of clothing to be within that very specific selection of muted tones. It works. That's how you get art direction that helps with the colorist kind of doing stuff. So I have a lot of visual things about this movie that I liked. I like the shadow work. There was some cool... fuck, I'm struggling, guys. I got nothing else. It was not my cup of tea. It was not my jam. I did not enjoy it. I'm going to give it a 6 just for the people that should continue working in movies. Just stop working for Robert Eggers. If you like his shit, go ahead. But fuck off, dude.
Wow. Who wants to follow that? Jared says he. Oh, Kristen does. Oh,
bring us back around. I'm sorry. I'm cranky today.
I was going to say, Mike brings up a lot of really good points. This movie is technically very, very, very well done. And somehow it is still a bit boring and I don't care. And I spent most of the movie just sort of picking apart, especially.
She's getting choked up.
I am.
That's how emotional she is right now.
Especially on the first viewing, I really just sat and picked apart the movie instead of getting engrossed in it, instead of watching it, instead of caring about any of it. And from the trailer, this should have been incredible. One of the things that Eggers does that I do enjoy is he's really good at portraying different, different subcultures and this specifically the gypsies and their sacrifice. And that's always something that's very interesting in his movies. But like That's not a, and yeah, the costumes and yeah, the production design and yeah, everything technically is also really amazing. But that's not enough to make me want to sit and watch this movie. It's enough to make me usually sit and watch it one time and then I kind of forget everything. Like I have seen other movies of his and I don't remember any of them because I just don't care about any of them. And
Black Phillip.
Sorry, what?
Oh, never mind.
This is from The Witch, and I've seen it, and I don't care. I sat and picked it apart, too. And what is it about? Honestly, I don't remember. It was stupid.
It's about finding your family.
No, it's not. And
yes, it is.
There's he's like a little... Right. Is it? God.
Yeah, it's about finding your own family.
Isn't, but there's like a, chosen like there's goats family. And the devil, and oh my God, it's so stupid.
Well, I mean, that's the background.
Pride is the deadliest scene.
Yeah, okay. Anyway. I mean, I guess technically Eggers can keep making movies. I'm not going to go as far as Mike's decree there, but I do think he should get like a better script at the scriptwriter. At the very least, he should pick better scripts. Like the topics.
He
of
writes
every...
his own things. That's no. part of why I have a frustration
well,
with
him. He co-writes. No. He usually has a, yeah, another co-writer.
Oh, that's
well,
really
this,
sad.
This movie credits him as.
Oh, is writer. He just the sole writer on this one?
I think so.
I thought, okay, well, it doesn't matter.
He had Chris Columbus and his wife as creative producers. But,
oh, wow.
Yeah, he talked about like them helping him creatively, but he wrote the movie. Yeah, anyway, sorry. Continue, Chris.
Yeah, well, okay, so maybe that's the issue then is he's a little too involved because he has really great... Every time a movie of his is announced, I am so excited for it, including this one. I see it, and I remember why I do not like Eggers at all. And so, anyway, here we are. I'm going to give it... I'll give it a 7. On second viewing, I didn't hate it as much. Maybe if I watch The Witch and The Northman and The Lighthouse, again, I wouldn't hate them as much either, but I didn't.
I thought you liked The Northman. Didn't we do that on the show?
Yeah, I did, and I didn't like it. That is...
No, she didn't like The Northman.
I did not like The Northman.
She didn't like any... Like, very, very little about The Northman did she like.
Man, I just rewrote your opinion in my head to what I wanted it to be.
Liked it. You liked it. I remember you loved it so much that you rewrote my... That's fine. The Lighthouse, I will say, is my favorite Eggers film, but I don't actually enjoy it. I just like the sweaters in it. So, anyway... Here we are. I give it a 7.
No sweaters in this one.
It's a good, there are not. Good sweaters in that movie.
No, there are. I go back and watch The Lighthouse with the sweaters in mind.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
There's some good sweaters. Okay. When you hear of a Robert Eggers movie, there's an expectation. You're going to see something weird. You know, there's going to be some fucked up shit. And it was... There was an expectation going into this film, which I had set the bar pretty high. I'd only seen The Witch and The Northman at this point when I saw it the first time. And I was kind of let down. I thought it was boring. I thought it was too long. I got lost in the middle. It was very same to me, you know. But I was also, I think it's the mindset. Like, you know, I think you get, it's one of the movies you need to see multiple times, at least for me to appreciate it. And also I'd seen The Lighthouse, but by the time that I got to the next one, so I kind of got more into his like thing, into his style that he tries to do. I do think this is probably one of his most cohesive films. I think this is one of it's one of the easiest ones to actually follow as a story.
Fuck I think the other ones. Jesus Christ. Sorry.
Yeah. But also, The Witch is just so good, man. It's he knows how to create tone, and he knows how to, like, you know, like, he always has such fucking interesting characters, and like through everything that he does, and his character work is really, really strong. We talked about some of the problems with the story in this one, but I think that the biggest thing that holds him back in this one is that this is not his movie. This is an adaptation that he has to feel like that he has to stay within certain confines that make this movie what it is, because it still needs to be a Nosferatu movie. So I think that that's where it lacks a little bit. But as far as him as a filmmaker, I think this is probably his strongest thing that he's put out as far as like a cohesive film. I think that this is a good step into him getting into larger things. I've actually heard that, like, there's talk that he's going to do the next Labyrinth film, which is a little fucking scary to me. That's
a waste of his fucking goddamn talent.
Yeah. And also, who's going to take over for fucking Jim Henson and his crew? And also,
I thought Jim Henson has a
David
company,
Bowie.
Right?
Yeah, but are they going to be a part of it? You think Edgar's is going to bring in fucking goddamn Jim Henson's company to do this?
They worked with Guillermo del Toro on Pinocchio.
Yeah.
Right?
How about we get Guillermo del Toro to come in and do Labyrinth instead of this guy? You know,
because he's doing Frankenstein.
That would be fucking
fuck
badass.
Labyrinth. That's a waste of his talent, too. What? No! Stop!
We don't need to remake a movie that was already pretty fucking great. But like,
Before the talks of The Labyrinth, he said his next film was going to be a movie called The Night, and it's going to be set in medieval time.
I would watch the fuck out of that.
I think that's his thing. Like, he's quoted as saying that he doesn't want to shoot anything. The thought of shooting a car or a cell phone makes him want to fucking shoot himself in the head.
Cool, go ahead and go shoot some cars.
Anyways, I'm gonna pull a 9 in on this one. If the witch is a 10, this one's a 9.
The witch is not a 10. The witch breaks the scale and goes past 11. You know, for real, best movie this entry. I mean, like, is there a better one? I don't know. That's the one I
probably
always go. Wrong.
Kristen, watch it again.
Avatar, The Way of Water. Better movie. 10 out of 10 out of 10 out of 10 is what we gave that movie. I'm just gonna throw that out there.
It's a great movie. It's a great movie.
It's a great movie.
It's a great movie.
Different genre.
Yeah, not the same. Yeah, no, I understand what you guys are saying about the movie being boring. I experienced that my first time, but to be fair, before this came out, I also watched every single fucking adaptation except for the Doug Jones one of Nosferatu and every fucking goddamn Dracula fucking film, including Blackula, which features Dracula for like a second. He's Dracula's soul brother. Actual tagline. You know, so I maybe was a little burnout of Dracula by the time I got to this movie. And the film does have like, I don't know, the way it's cut, the way it's shot, the blocking. It's got a nice, there are these moments where it falls in this very hypnotic rhythm that I could see, if you know the story, lulling you to sleep a little bit. But man, just, you know, it's the story of fucking Dracula. If you like fucking Dracula, guess what? This is a really technically well-made version of it. I don't have a problem with any of the actors. I like the characters. I think these characters work fine. Nicholas Holt is a massive fucking goddamn improvement over fucking Keanu Reeves. Holy shit.
Major.
That's true.
Yeah, William Dafoe was great. And fucking Lily Rose Depp. Who the fuck knew she had this shit in her, man? Like, oh my God.
Kevin Smith, bro. Kevin Smith saw it.
Oh, yeah? He was like, yoga hoser or whatever. What was that terrible movie he made with her?
I think she was also in Tusk, maybe.
Well, yeah. Jared, I didn't even watch that, okay?
Oh, that one's that out of all of them, that's the one you need to watch.
What?
That's the only Kevin Smith movie that you will fucking love.
I liked Red State.
Okay, that's besides that one.
Okay.
You need to watch Tusk. As fucked up movies that you love, you will fucking love Tusk. Tusk is so bleak and ridiculous.
It looked like a funny, it looked like a scary
funny
movie version of like a Human Centipede.
You need to watch Tusk.
All right, I'll watch Tusk. Okay. All right. Okay. It looks great. It's an adaptation of Dracula. It's a 10. Fuck you guys. And fucking Robert Eggers is a fucking goddamn tremendous fucking filmmaker. The Northman is fucking great. Go back and watch that movie, you fucking goddamn uncultured swines. Also, this is the highest grossing Dracula adaptation since Bram Stoker's Dracula. And if this movie is boring and you want to watch something that's a fun monster Dracula, go watch Last Voyage of the Demeter. Nobody saw that. Came out last year. It is literally Dracula in his bat form, like eating the people on the ship for the entire runtime. You'll love it.
Yeah, you can get more ship out of it. Marvelously? Is that the word? Orchestrated by director Robert Eggers, Nosferatu is a behemoth of a horror film that is equal parts repulsive and seductive. Rotten Tomatoes brings in Nosferatu with an 85% tomato meter and a 73% popcorn meter.
Sorry, I'm just thinking about equal parts. What equal parts what?
Equal parts repulsive and seductive.
Who is getting seduced by this movie?
Oh, you didn't think all those... Oh, come to me. All that
guys,
shit was like
guys,
sexy,
guys,
bro.
Guys, this movie's not seductive. Not seductive.
And she's getting like railed. She's like, shh, let him see our love. Show him our love.
Love that shit. I'm here for it. Anybody got anything else? So with that, you've been listening to the Movie Crew Podcast. If you want to get in touch with us, you can do so by sending us an email to moviecrewpod@gmail.com. You can follow us on Facebook, X, Instagram. I think that's it. Yeah, at Movie Crew Pod. Jared, where can the audience follow you?
You can follow me on Instagram at Check the Gate.
Griggs, where can they follow you?
I'm on Instagram at Griggsy Media. That's G-R-I-G-G-S-Y Media.
And Kristen, where can they follow you?
You can follow me on Instagram at Kristen Magdalene. That's Kristen with a K and an I.
And you guys can follow me at Twitter or X at Elkins Edits. And are we moving on to Wolfman? Are we getting hairy here?
God, I hope so.
So what we got? We're going to do Universal's The Original Wolfman from 1941.
I thought we'd do Wolfman and then we'd do Better Man. Because, you know.
Wait, what?
A Monkey Man.
No, but that would be a next month thing, Jared. Come on, let's okay. finish the monsters out here.
Okay.
Or are you just worried that Better Man's is not going to be in theaters?
It's not going to be in theaters. It is the other two guys.
Let's just do Better Man followed by Planet of the Apes, and then it'll all make sense in the same universe.
Oh.
No, because no
Better
one
Man,
sees
Ape Man.
No one sees Robbie Williams as the chimpanzee.
I know.
You should watch it, Mike. It's actually really good.
Is it? It's fucking don't give a shit about that kind of a kitschy concept as a movie.
Yeah, but once you watch it. Yeah.
I saw the trailer and I was like, really, guys? Really? This is what we're doing now? Really?
Yes, and it plays really
Everyone's
really
like,
well.
It's the greatest version of a musical ever. And I was like, sign me the fuck off. No thanks. Bye.
Whatever, dude. Planet
They're so
it.
Pleasing you, Mike!
No, there's not. No, there's not. I want to have a good time and I don't care about if it's a fucking musical.
Planet of the Apes, so the much musical sounds great. What are you talking about? Dr. Zaius, Dr. Zaius.
Dr. Zaius, Dr. Zaius.
Best Simpson bit of all time. All right, we're out of here. We're going to play track number one, Once Upon a Time, from the soundtrack. This is from Robin Caroline. Enjoy.